Ulterior.
Say, Drake, I hear you like I'm young. You better not ever go to cell block one. Holy shit, bro. Yeah, Kendrick at the halftime was fucking incredible, and not really even just because of like how much of a Kendrick fan that I am, but that was genuinely probably the most fun I've ever had watching a Super Bowl halftime performance. A lot of the other ones over the years have been fucking amazing, as everybody knows, but I think because of like my attachment to this specific instance, it was like, I don't want to say bigger, but like at least like in my head, more grandiose and tailored to like my own interests. And, you know, perhaps maybe like other people out there, I thought about this halftime show pretty much as I thought about the actual game happening. We'll talk about that in a second, but like the entire weekend, I was like at random points, just like saying to myself, squabble up, squabble up, squabble up, squabble up. And then he fucking opened with squabble up. And I was like, holy shit, this is amazing. And then the rest of the set list from there, Humble, fucking DNA, Luther, and All the Stars, both with SZA. Oh my fucking God, bro, SZA. And then obviously Not Like Us, which had kind of been like teased at one point in the performance. I believe it was right before Luther. And then he finally went into Not Like Us. And I know a lot of us were wondering throughout the, I guess like the build up to this halftime show, how much is he going to talk about and reference Drake in Not Like Us? How is he going to navigate saying some of the things that, you know, probably shouldn't be saying on TV? And then given that Not Like Us became like, you know, the most winningest song in Grammy's history, or however you want to phrase that, the week before, you know, there was no way he was not going to play Not Like Us. It was just a matter of like, how far is he going to go with it? And then he fucking not just teetered that line, he pretty much crossed it, and it was fucking amazing. And like that diabolical smile that Gang had when he said, say Drake, and obviously it became like a viral thing. A lot of this fucking performance became a viral thing for that matter. The fucking stadium shouted A minor the exact way that I had hoped that they would, and I was not let down whatsoever. I don't think anybody was. I've replayed like so much of this halftime show since then, but I think more so than anything else, just like hearing the way the crowd yelled A minor, and then like some live video shot in the stadium in New Orleans, and that place is so fucking loud when he says A minor. And then he closes with TV off, and then actually bringing Mustard out for TV off. That was sensational. Like just an all around fucking tremendous halftime show, and definitely something that I'm going to remember for the rest of my life, as will I the game itself that happened, the actual Super Bowl, because the Chiefs got their fucking asses beat, bro. Like no funny shit, just straight belts to asses by the Eagles the entire game. And this was like especially special to me, you know, because of the way that the Texans and Chiefs game in the divisional round went. Because it's one thing if the Texans had just lost to the Chiefs, obviously that would have like crushed me, but it would have just been, you know, what it is. It's the manner in which it happened, with all of the bullshit phantom calls and the genuine belief I have that the Texans were robbed of the opportunity to play in their first ever AFC Championship game because of some very, very, very sketchy officiating that happened to favor the Chiefs. And it happened to favor them in the AFC Championship game against the Bills as well. The Bills absolutely converted on fourth down. You cannot fucking tell me otherwise. But I don't want to say all that doesn't matter anymore, more because it definitely does, and it's going to, you know, hurt me for a while. But at the very least, the Chiefs did not have their fairy tale ending, because guess what happened to them? Fucking Jalen Hurts happened, and Saquon Barkley happened, and Cooper DeJean happened, and AJ Brown happened. I don't give a fuck about anything else. This was all that I wanted to see out of, you know, Sunday night, the Eagles winning and Kendrick Lamar just beating the shit out of Drake, and both happened, and I was incredibly happy with the end result. And you know what else I've been incredibly happy with over the last few weeks? Scene music. I think that we have seen a a great effort and output from a lot of amazing bands in the scene, some already well established, and then some, you know, kind of on the upward trend and getting their names out there. And I want to get through as much of that as I possibly can. I don't really have like an agenda for this episode. There is no plan laid out. I'm gonna definitely go through all of the top ranked Scenic Overlook songs for the year so far. So, you know, we're talking like Bring Me the Horizon, Invin Anime Times Silent Planet, Mayday Parade, Deadlands Times The Pretty Wild, while sprinkling in a couple of other singles because, again, there have been some tremendous songs so far. And we will definitely talk about some albums, maybe not all of the ones I reviewed so far this year. If you want anything like as far as extensive thoughts on some of them, you can definitely check out the reviews on Instagram and Twitter. But, you know, we'll work through the waters for this. We'll see where we end up and we'll see where the tides take us, per se. Thank you guys so much for listening and tapping in. And I really, really hope you guys enjoy this episode. Actually, before we get into the episode, I do want to kind of address something that I hinted at a little bit right before the intro played, where I said, if you want extensive thoughts on the albums that I reviewed over the last few weeks so far in 2025, then check out the Ulterior Instagram and Twitter. And the reason why I want to bring that up is because I feel like that's a little bit of the reasoning why sometimes I feel like I'm okay not having a podcast episode out during a given week, because, you know, the reviews used to like not have any words attached to them on social media. So it would just be like the star rating and then no elaboration, because I would choose to elaborate on my thoughts during podcast episodes. Whereas now, because I've started over the past few months to like actually give, you know, full write-ups on social media to albums, sometimes I think, okay, my thoughts are out there, so maybe a podcast episode isn't, you know, a necessity in some cases. But even with that, I genuinely do love getting to get on this microphone sometimes and talk to you guys about music. And, you know, the last year or so has been trying. I'm not going to go into like some fucking, you know, life story, because I've done that enough in the past. But there are definitely, you know, outside reasons why this show isn't weekly anymore. But the goal is to indeed get it back to a weekly format. And I think as we start to see the, you know, release schedule over the next few weeks kind of intensify, I would really, really like to make the effort on a weekly basis to get more podcast episodes out to you guys. So it's not just a case of, hey, go read this thing on social media. Because even if that does the job of getting my general thoughts about an album or a song out there, there's really nothing that compares to being able to talk to you guys with my voice and, you know, having these sort of mini conversations about whatever is going on in the scene. So definitely soon, I would say, be hopeful? Fuck it. I'm going to say over the next few weeks, expect this show to return to its weekly format and for me to, you know, really get back into like the groove of things, because I miss being able to do this weekly and I would love to. So let's hope that, you know, that does end up being the case. Let me see here. Let me look at the top songs over the last few weeks and like what I want to start off with. This is what I want to open with. Bring Me the Horizon. They surprise a lot of fucking people by putting out a cover of Wonderwall by Oasis. So when I posted the official like scenic overlook ranking for the week of Wonderwall, and I put it at number one. I don't remember exactly what I said verbatim, but I started off that entry like saying something along the lines of like, you're so mad that this song is so good, cry, 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 which I understand comes across as like very like joking and condescending and not at all serious. So what I am going to do now is relay my actual, genuine, real, legitimate, and serious thoughts about the Wonderwall cover to you guys. Aw, you're so mad that the song is so good. Cry, 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 cry. Y'all thought I was joking about that? Y'all thought my Bring Me the Horizon chain was fake? Fuck no, son. This cover is fucking outstanding and tremendous, and whatever other, like, positive term I can apply to what I think about this Wonderwall cover, I will do so for the rest of my life, because, again, I think this cover fucking rocks. And you know what's, like, one of the craziest things about this cover is that it was revealed to us, like, line for line, bar for bar, basically what it was going to be, and some of us didn't realize it, because there was a teaser image posted. I can't remember if it was to Ollie's story or the Bring Me account story, but like somewhere on social media, there was a video, or rather a still shot of a video being filmed, and it showed the members of Bring Me the Horizon in this room, and Ollie had like these glasses on, and some people did make the connection that it looked like a shot from the Wonderwall video by Oasis, but in my mind, like, I was immediately thinking of, like, what post-human songs or next-gen songs kind of fit this vibe, like, what could this be? And I went to, like, an NA music video. I legitimately thought that was what was going to happen, and then suddenly I woke up one day on a random fucking Thursday or whatever it was, and it's like, hey, Bring Me dropped. What do you mean Bring Me dropped? Wonderwall. What do you mean Wonderwall? By fucking Oasis? Yeah. What the fuck, dude? And when I heard that it was a Wonderwall cover, for whatever reason, and this is to my own fault because I should never make the assumption that Bring Me the Horizon is going to do something in the box per se, I thought it was going to be an acoustic cover, because why wouldn't it be? Or rather, like, I couldn't initially wrap my head, and this is before hearing the song, wrap my head around the idea of a Wonderwall cover being done in, like, the full-on cadence of Bring Me the Horizon. And then I press play on this bitch, and it is a full fucking send Bring Me the Horizon rendition of Wonderwall. Completely down to the style and calamity and overall direction of Next Gen. It sounds like Wonderwall being put through, like, this Next Gen tunnel. And it's fucking amazing. And I could not be any happier with the end result of this cover. And even calling it a cover feels like, you know, kind of like loose in some ways. Like, this is a full-on, like, reimagining, a repurposing of a classic song by a band who I think very much so fits into, like, that new echelon for, like, you know, UK bands. I'm not saying that Bring Me the Horizon is as big as Oasis, because of course they're not. But the way that people looked at Oasis in the past, like, that's how I look at Bring Me, and I think that's how other people do as well. And then, like, very shortly after this cover dropped, fucking Liam Gallagher from Oasis responded to the cover on Twitter, and he said that he was a big fan and that this made his day, and it's like, that's probably the validation that Bring Me really wanted out of this cover. Maybe not, like, they really wanted it, but it was one of those things where they might have thought, like, okay, what if Liam or even Noel respond to this, then, like, you know, what's that gonna look like? And it turns out Liam fucking loves it. And you know what? I love it too, Liam. I really, really do. And because it was number one in Scenic Overlook, by the rules set in place for this sort of stuff by myself, that means that the Wonderwall cover will be a part of the 100 Best Songs of 2025 series that will be happening in December. I'd have to, like, fact check this, but I want to say that would make this the first cover that ever gets that kind of a nod from myself on Ulterior, but I have, like, no issues whatsoever calling Wonderwall one of the best songs of 2025, because I truthfully, honest to God, genuinely think that's going to be what my mindset still is in, what, 10 months? Yeah, 10 months, right? Yeah, Wonderwall, cover, Bring Me the Horizon, outstanding work. Genuinely a fucking masterpiece of a cover. So now to shift gears to a different single from this last month that, like, really, really moved me, and I would even say surprisingly, and I'll get to why that is in a minute. It's a new May Day Parade song called By the Way. Following after you feels like I've covered every longitude. Doing what I have to do and never doing it again. By the way, I'm still the same every day. You ran away from me, still here. Laughing at me, making fake. So the reason why I said that I found it to be very surprising at how much I like, or not even like, but fucking love this song is because May Day Parade is a band who, they haven't really been able to move me like this in quite a while. Like, if I'm being honest with you guys, I'm looking back to Black Lines in 2015 as the last time that I can recall, like, me being super fucking invested in something that May Day Parade was doing. And I thought that the effort since then, like, they've been, like, you know, solid for the most part, but nothing that grabbed me the way that By the Way does. And I could, like, kind of have that inclination almost right away from pressing play on the music video for this song and how it opens with Derek, like, you know, in this dark lit room playing this insanely, like, beautiful and majestic melody. And then the way that the rest of the video progresses from there with the band performing, like, in this kind of like an apartment setting, it's like a proper emo package that was done for By the Way. And I think the song is just fucking, like, precious. That's a weird way to describe a song, I think. But, like, it's like this warmth that wraps around you when you listen to By the Way. And, like, something on the outside that, you know, might be affecting you, By the Way acts as, like, this coat of sorts, like a protector from anything that could harm you. Like, that's the vibrancy that I get from By the Way. It's a part of the EP called Sweet that is dropping on April 18th. And if you had told me, you know, towards the end of 2024 that one of the bands that would, like, really be moving me this way in the first quarter of 2025 is May Day Parade, I don't know how I would have envisioned that coming across. I don't know what I would have thought the band has to do for that to happen. But whatever those steps were, like, every single one of them was taken with By the Way. And I am so invested in this band right now. There is a huge collaboration on the horizon with two juggernaut bands in the metalcore space right now. Invent Anime and Silent Planet, they kicked off that collaboration with the single Return to One. Even just off of the name value of these two bands, the idea of a collaboration amongst them already feels like a winning formula, you know? But then when you actually listen to Return to One, it's, like, really remarkable, I would say, at how balanced it is, where it never feels like Marcus or Garrett's voice are, like, overtaking one another. They are working in complete unison on Return to One, and given that this is part of a three-song EP called Bloom in Heaven coming on, I believe it's March 28th next month. I'd have to, like, double-check that. But regardless, you know, that project, that EP, there is a world's worth of potential there, as is for the upcoming double headline tour that the bands announce, where Silent Planet will be playing Super Bloom in its entirety, and Invent Animate will be doing the same thing for Heavener. This is just fucking sick to see. Like, this level of a collaboration between two bands of this caliber, I am very excited for the year ahead for Silent Planet and Invent Animate. And we go from one collaboration to another. There was a joint effort by Deadlands and The Pretty Wild on a single called Kundalini, and I legitimately cannot fucking get enough of it, guys. I what I do want to add is that, and this is like me being completely honest, full transparency, all that type shit, this was the most difficult week thus far in 2025 for me to ultimately decide on a number one choice for Scenic Overlook, because the next two singles that I'm going to be talking about after Kundalini, they were also like right there in contention, and there, I would imagine, will definitely be weeks in the coming months where had one of those two songs been released, then they easily would have been number one. What made me decide that Kundalini is definitively my favorite song to release in the last week, or like a little bit beyond a week or so, is just the effectiveness of the idea of a collaboration where it is a female-fronted band, which is Deadlands, and then a double female-fronted band with the Pretty Wild. So ultimately, you have Casey, Jill, and Jules all able to lend what it is that all three of them do very uniquely to each other and make a song that I think is going to be able to stick with me for the rest of the year, and then even beyond that. I think Kundalini is like the pinnacle of the work thus far by Deadlands and the Pretty Wild. I think maybe you guys might know of the Pretty Wild, even if you don't think that you do by name. They had a song a couple months ago called Sleepwalker that's been doing some numbers on TikTok. It has like that breakdown call where it's like choking on the dirt, Reaper fear me. Why was that my fucking coughing voice? Whatever, I'm not going to do it over. My point through all that is that there already is some attention on the Pretty Wild, and I would hope that is able to translate to attention for this song and for Deadlands, because there's a plethora of very talented people involved in this song. And, you know, all in all, like, this is just the kind of like metalcore song that I would have been fucking gassing up, you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago on this show, because like this is like so tailored to some of the like the hidden gems that I remembered discovering for Ulterior all that time ago. And so Kundalini puts me in a very familiar position. That's how much I love this song. I just get like so stumbled over my words and tripped up and all that shit. Kundalini, I think, is fucking awesome. And I don't know how many of you guys listening to this episode right now have heard this song yet, but if you have not, please, please, please go check it out. I had just said that there were two other songs from last week as of this recording that very easily could have been number one in Scenic Overlook. One of them was by Spirit Box. It is No Loss, No Love. This is the third and ultimately final single for Tsunami C ahead of the album's release on, I believe it is March 7th. So literally just a short number of weeks away. And I know for a fact that like when it comes to what has already been announced as releasing in the first half of 2025, this is the record that I have been like eyeing the most and anticipating the heaviest, because Spirit Box is just one of, I think, the most perfect bands out there, a band that has, in my eyes, never done any wrong with their material, never like once deterred away from what it is that they do extraordinarily well. And I think you see that so effortlessly on this track because of not just the song itself, but you look at the music video and just how like in sync the whole like black and white theme really is with this song. I think we really did get that off of Soft Spine and Perfect Soul, but I don't know, guys, it's like that like direction and style for the overall presentation of Tsunami C, I felt like it most closely like delivered home the message on No Loss, No Love, if that makes any sense. I really, really appreciate the approach to its heaviness, because in my mind, it does differentiate a bit from Soft Spine, which is the lead single. And Soft Spine is just like very in your face heavy, whereas I think No Loss, No Love, my voice is kind of going out now, I'll clear it in a little bit. No Loss, No Love, it's like a little bit more, I would say, methodical in how it lays out its ideas. Like, there are some quiet moments where the bass is like amplified and it makes this kind of almost creepy effect to the song's style at that point. There's a moment later on right before the song like goes into a breakdown where everything like kind of quiets again and Courtney is like almost whispering to the listener, and there's like this giant atmospheric feeling surrounding her voice. Like, every element that makes No Loss, No Love what it is, I think is like to a fucking T, spirit box, and I have all of the highest of hopes in the world for Tsunami Sea, and I have zero fucking doubt in my mind that this record is going to deliver on every single one of those notes. And on the subject of one of the best bands in the world doing what it is that they are extraordinarily great at, we also have to look at what Immanence just did on the song Death Shall Have No Dominion. I really, really want to put this into perspective because I think it paints the image of just like how fucking next level Immanence constantly feel whenever there is new material out by the band. We are not even a full year removed from the release of their album last year called The Black, which I hold in like such high regards, and I think that was evident by the best songs and records series for 2024, given, you know, how many times I spoke about Immanence and the choice of words I had for them and how highly I constantly speak about that band. And they come out now with Death Shall Have No Dominion, and it is, in my opinion, very, very comfortably one of the best songs that the band has ever released. I feel like when anybody thinks of Immanence, one of the first key elements of the band that comes to mind is the orchestral bits and the violin bits. And I feel like Death Shall Have No Dominion is one of the best instances of just like how clean the band can kind of input those elements into something that, you know, has always been akin to like modern metalcore. But I think Death Shall Have No Dominion, it's not unfair to me, at least, and like my own like judgment and rationale, to compare some of the sonic tones in this song to like symphonic deathcore. Like, it really gives off that energy. What the fuck happened to my voice, dude? Jesus. That's the Immanence effect, I guess. It gives off like those vibes, and it makes it feel like an even darker and heavier song than what Immanence has done before. And I think that is a high bar that Immanence once again managed to set for not just themselves, but any other band out there in metalcore who thinks about implementing any of these kinds of elements into what it is that they're doing. There is no band that is doing it right now like Immanence, and there's a reason why, you know, everybody with some kind of a voice in metalcore is constantly talking about how fucking excellent they are. So now, there is one more... My cat Historia was trying to get on the chair. Historia, you can get on the chair. It's okay. I don't mind. You can sit next to me while I talk about music. You don't want to? Alright, she changed her mind. What I was saying was that there is one more single from the last number of weeks that I want to highlight right now, and it is a band who I have actually never spoken about on this show before, Storm Orchestra and their new single, Super Player. I do want to say this first about the single, which is that it is part of the album Get Better, which is releasing on April 30th, one day after my 30th birthday. So happy birthday to me, and what a fucking birthday gift, because the time that I've been able to spend with Storm Orchestra's music over the last number of weeks, and, you know, specifically the singles rollout so far for Get Better, they have become one of those bands that I just, like, have been kicking myself over, like, how did I not know about them before? Like, how did I not discover Storm Orchestra much earlier and give myself the chance to gas them up on this show? Because I am so fucking into what they're doing. I think Super Player is an incredible single that, like, really gives a close and accurate glimpse at what it is this band is doing and how they have a real chance in my mind at kind of like taking the mantle of French alternative bands. I almost said metalcore, but they're not metalcore. They have metalcore like elements, but I think alternative is a much safer like umbrella term to apply to what they're doing. Just Super Player is like so just catchy and vibrant. It's got that kind of rhythm that you can just like power walk to in a way. There is a lot to love about Storm Orchestra and a lot that I look forward to speaking about in the future, because now I feel like when I do review Get Better in 2 months' time, I will be doing so with the mindset that I am making up lost time for this band, and again, just like my own, I guess, failure on my end, because it feels like a failure to have just had this band completely like fly me by and miss them. Storm Orchestra are stars, and I'm very eager and excited to watch that star brighten and blossom this year. So those were the singles that I specifically chose to talk about on this episode. Of course, there were plenty of other amazing and great singles over the last few weeks, such as by, you know, Lights, Sleep Theory, Poison the Whale. Fucking Poison the Whale came back, guys. Silverstein, and I wish I could, you know, dedicate all the time in the world right now to these singles, but all I can say right now is, you know, if you feel like it, search through the playlist for Ulterior on Spotify. You can look through the posts on Twitter and Instagram for singles reviews, and I will later on have the proper chances to speak about bands like Silverstein or artists like Lights when they come out with their respective albums in the very near future. And, you know, again, more reasons why I really, really want to get this podcast back on the track of being weekly. As far as the albums that I reviewed over the last month ago, I've reviewed six in total. I am taking three of them, and those three are the ones that I will be like really dedicating the time to, because there's a lot that I want to get to in regards to them. What I will do quickly, though, is at least shout out the other three albums that I'm not going to be going in depth on, and they are Cursed by Paleface Swiss, Forgiving Spree by Slowly Slowly, and Tragedy of the Commons by Great American Ghosts. Tremendous albums all around. There has not been an album or project at all that I reviewed this year that I didn't connect to in some way. So, you know, those three records, definitely go check them out. Here are the three that I will be reviewing in depth right now, but I'm just going to go off of them one by one. The first one up is actually by Stick to Your Guns. It is Keep Planting Flowers. Because of the longevity and the tenure of Stick to Your Guns, there are definitely a lot of people out there who look at this band as like, you know, a constant in their fandom for like hardcore slash metalcore slash, you know, whatever sort of term you want to apply to the evolving style of Stick to Your Guns. I know that for myself, they've been a band who, ever since I was a teenager, and it was specifically on the Hope division from 2010 that I like really started to pay attention to them and who they are and be so just engrossed in their music, and then how that evolved later on with Diamond and then Disobedient. Stick to your guns. I think when they're at the top of their game, the scene feels like a better place. And that is ultimately the message that I want to convey, because Keep Planting Flowers, I think, is the proper and near perfect continuation and expansion of this amazing band's legacy. I think one of the most impressive things about Keep Planting Flowers to me is it's only about 25 minutes, like if even that, for 10 songs. So a lot of what makes Stick to Your Guns who they are, it's like packed into these tracks, but not in a way where anything ever feels like cluttered or overcapacitated. It is exactly how each song should be laid out and conceptualized. Like, take the opener, We All Die Anyway, a minute and 20 seconds. And in that minute 20, you get the idea of like the rhythm that the record is going for, the kind of melodies you can expect, how insane Jesse still is to this fucking day as a vocalist. And it's that prowess on the part of Jesse that I think is able to help some of these songs like really find that next gear of sort and become some of the brightest spots in the discography of Stick to Your Guns. Like songs like Spineless, Severed Forever, and Eats Me Up, those choruses, like, they fucking hit, dude. And again, they feel like these bits and pieces that you could put on like a highlight reel for Jesse per se. Eats Me Up in particular, I think, is still my favorite song off of the record. I say still because there are definitely a vast number here that could have overthrown Eats Me Up in the time since I reviewed this record last month. Like the title track, Keep Planting Flowers, that song is like so emotionally charged and very moving in the way that the band approached it. And I really, really appreciate getting that kind of a song on this record. I think Invisible Rain is another very obvious strong suit on the record. I say obvious because that song like really helped, I'm trying to figure out the way to say this. It helped the rollout for this album trend upward in a really, really big way. And I feel like you can attribute a lot of the record's anticipation and the sort of hype around it to just how effective of a single Invisible Rain was. And then the album closes with Hate For You, which features Connie Scarboza. I guess we should do this now. The Sea Space Cowboy stuff, and I didn't really want this to like interfere with the review for Stick to Your Guns, but I realize now that it's kind of not avoidable. So if anybody doesn't know, there's been some ongoing stuff between Connie and Sea Space Cowboy as it pertains to the band deciding to take a tour over the summer with Dance Gavin Dance, and Connie was very outspoken about that, and it ended up leading to her leaving the band, and it does look like this is an, you know, official departure for Connie, or about as official as one could possibly be. And, you know, what does that spell for the future of Sea Space Cowboy, if there is one at all? I don't know. Time will tell. But in this particular moment, I do want to, you know, shift all of this focus to just how excellent Connie sounds on Hate For You, and how she really did become the voice to like help accentuate what it is about this track that works really well as a closer and kind of be like that definitive endpoint to Keep Planting Flowers. And really, guys, like by the time that I finished listening to this album, the very first go through of it, I was just like astonished that Stick to Your Guns can, you know, still be this quality of a band all of this time later. And they really are like some of the godfathers of the scene, or the current scene when you really think about it. And they are timeless. They are going to be around for fucking years to come still. And it makes me very, very happy to know that this is a band that, as reliable as they were 15 years ago, 10 years ago, they still have like the fast hand with that stuff right now. Stick to Your Guns, truly some of the all-time greats that we can appreciate and witness history be made through them. Now, to sort of contrast the tenured nature of Six Year Guns, these next two albums for this episode are coming from bands who are really just like starting to, you know, craft their own names and legacies in the scene. And it's going to be very exciting to see where they go from here, given just how fucking high I am on these two records. And the first one is by Live a Lie. It is called Living in the Static. Okay, so here is my thing with Live a Lie. I have actually known about this band for surprisingly much longer than I thought I did, because the very first song that I ever saved by the band on Spotify was VHS, which actually is a part of this record, Living in the Static. You guys know how on desktop Spotify tells you the exact day that you added a song to a playlist. VHS is showing up in my liked songs as having been added on July 12th, 2020. Brother, what the fuck was you doing on July 12th, 2020? You know what I was doing? I don't fucking know. I don't remember. Except for apparently fucking listening to VHS by Live a Lie and liking it enough to have it be saved after all this time and kind of tucked away, and then me not really having ever thought about the band again until I very, very recently saw a lot of hype and praise for Living in the Static on the TL. And if we're doing like peeling back the curtain, breaking the fourth wall type shit, this album technically, not even technically, it really did come out in 2024 in December, like during the last week or so of the year. But Live a Lie posted on social media that they would, you know, recognize the release date, I guess, as January 1st, so that people could put it in AOTY lists for 2025, which, even if that's just like a joking post, I took that shit to heart, and I was like, okay, you want to say that it's out January 1st, 2025, and not December 27th or 28th or whatever the fuck it really was? All right, bet. And I'm going to review this record, and I'm so, so fucking glad that I did, because Living in the Static is fucking tremendous, you guys. And also, because most of this album released ahead of time as singles, and by most of the album, I legitimately mean like 90% around there, there were some missed opportunities on my end to give these songs their flowers at the times of their respective releases. And there's really no excuse on my end other than just, you know, flat out saying like, I fucked up and I missed the ball when it came to dedicating time and attention to Live a Lie. Because, okay, let's say that honestly, This Is the Death of Me was a single that I covered at the time of its release in November of 2024. It's probably in the 100 best songs of that year. Even though it was just November, that song has been able to stick with me like very few songs in recent memory have been able to. And I just continuously go back to it, all the way from hearing it for the first time as part of this record, up to now telling you guys how much I love, honestly, This Is the Death of Me, and fucking Smothered, and Casting Shadows, and all of these incredible songs that do like such a remarkable job at showcasing the energy and the rhythm of Live a Lie. And for anybody who may have previously been fans of the band Ocean's 8 Alaska, the former vocalist of that band, James Harrison, he is the screamer here for Live a Lie. So there is some like instant familiarity that can be established between yourself, if you fall into that camp, and what Live a Lie is doing. And his voice works so well in unison with James, who is doing the cleans on this record. And it's really like one of those dynamics that I have to just like look at and be like, that fucking works, like, to a T. It is tremendous in everything that it does. The album feels like a proper throwback to a prior state of metalcore while embracing what it is about the genre that, you know, people can still find strengths in, and, like, really utilizes all of that to its advantage to make an album that, you know, again, it feels nostalgic while also feeling very forward-thinking. And I think those, like, ideas coming together and having that perfect blend of styles, to me, like, that's the ultimate calling card of Living in the Static, and it's primarily why I have been so high on this record since listening to it. And to be serious for a second, the idea of this band going on Twitter and being like, oh yeah, go ahead and just consider the release date to be 2025 and not 2024 for album of the year purposes. There are a lot of bands who, if they said something like that, I would scoff at and just be like, yeah, okay, whatever, get over yourselves. But it's fucking Live a Lie in this instance. And they put out a record that I felt very proud to, like, gas up and make sure that my thoughts are out there, and in turn help anybody who may have not listened to this band or this record before and be tapped into that. The idea of Live a Lie creating a pathway for people to, like, kind of embrace their album despite the release date, and I say despite the release date because I don't know if anybody else has ever done this before, and it doesn't happen too often. I know Palisades ended up doing this in 2018, where a record of theirs came out during the very last week, and because, like, my December No Linkin Park is, like, very tied to year-end lists and all that sort of pizzazz and shit, it's very, very hard for me to find the time to become invested in a release that fucking late into the year. But I will go ahead and, you know, play along with the notion that this really is a 2025 album, because Living in the Static does deserve every bit of praise and adulation and acclaim that anybody can give it, not just myself, but, like, legitimately anybody who comes across this record. And now for the final record for this episode. It is once again my first time ever speaking about this band on this show or any outlet for Ulterior. It is Vacant Home and their album, Can You Show Me Who I Am? Unlike Live a Lie and everything that I said about my introduction to that band, this is my first time being exposed to Vacant Home. Like, when I search Vacant Home in my Like Songs library, first thing that comes up is the Movement song off of Outgrown Things, and then nothing else until my first time listening to this record about a month ago now at this point. And the reason why it even really showed up on my radar, if you want to put it that way, and I don't remember exactly how the tweet was formatted, but it was posted to the State of the Scene Twitter account, and it was like the agenda for that week's episode. And what I noticed in that tweet was that the singular album review for that week was Vacant Home. And this is kind of my way of telling you guys, like, you know, the same way it's been for years now. The SOTS effect is very much so a real thing. And if Sam and Marcos are taking the time to talk about this, you know, relatively small band with a new album, I should take the time to listen to it and be, you know, curious in that regard. Like, hey, what is this? You know, let me give Vacant Home a chance. And I am incredibly grateful that this band became, you know, a part of my rotation in the last month, because Can You Show Me Who I Am feels like it was tailor-made to everything that I love about melodic hardcore and everything that I wish to listen to out of that genre. Because throughout the entire course of the album, you are treated to this palette of just like emotional movement and these blistering moments that feel chaotic while still being contained to the space that they have, you know, crafted for themselves. I look at a song like Weathered and how it has like that, you know, that kind of like very somber and slow intro that you can just tell if you're kind of like, you know, a veteran in melodic hardcore, that it is building to something bigger than itself. And when that wall of sound finally hits you, there's not really much else I can compare as far as like a euphoric feeling, a very strange euphoric feeling at that, because this whole album is rooted in, you know, a lot of somberness. But when that wall of sound hits, it fucking smacks you in the face, dog. And then there are some interlude pieces on the album that I think really add to the character of Can You Show Me Who I Am, like Will I Ever See You Again, which goes into Knife's Edge and really helps elevate Knife's Edge, in my opinion. And then the same thing with the title track, which paves the way for the closer You'll Find Yourself in Someone Else to become a song that I have just been like so obsessed with since first hearing it. And it's probably my favorite on the album as of now. And I say as of now because I do expect this to be an album where my favorite on it fluctuates throughout the next, you know, few months, few years, a fucking eternity, whatever it might be. One of the things that I really love about You'll Find Yourself in Someone Else is that it feels like a summarization of everything that you had heard up to that point. And I feel like that is the true mark of a phenomenal closing song for this kind of an album that is such an emotional journey and roller coaster. That song ends with like this kind of like a radio static effect. It's a little bit hard to explain in words. You would kind of just have to listen to it for yourself. But I think it fits so well into, again, like that, like the calamity of this album. And I finished off Can You Show Me Who I Am just wanting to get right back into it and starting all over from Flaws and then going into Thoughts We Can't Reclaim and then Between Branches and a Dying Sun and just like finding a new heightened level of appreciation every single time I listen to these songs. And I still feel the same way, you know, all these weeks later. I feel like I am still finding these new elements within each track on Can You Show Me Who I Am, and finding even more reasons to love an album that I already love with my entire fucking being. To me, this is melodic hardcore personified. This is the setting of the standard for what I want the genre to achieve for the remainder of the year, and it is a very, very high bar that is going to be set by this record for myself and maybe for others out there who, you know, really, really appreciate this style of music and this genre. Because when a band just hits a home run in this playing field the way that Vacant Home did, it makes it feel like melodic hardcore is on top of the world, and right next to it, on top of said world, is Vacant fucking Home. And that's it. Those were the albums and singles that I picked out to discuss on this episode in detail. And like I said earlier near the start of the episode, there will be an effort on my end to get this back on a weekly release schedule in the near future. Might not be next week, might not be the week after, but I give you guys my word that sooner than later, we will be back. Like, for real back. Full-time back. So fucking back, even. And hopefully in that time, I figure out what to do for the outro, because it's been a few months now. I'm still quite embarrassed that I don't know how to close episodes out, but we will figure it out as we go along, like we do with pretty much every other thing in life, you know what I mean? Have a great weekend, guys. Happy Valentine's Day, and do not let me catch you listening to that new Drake collab.